I would like to commend you all for this morning with our visitors. They were extremely impressed with the genuineness and the kindness that you showed them. Some of you may have, they were Muslims. They were here visiting, and they had brought, the gentleman had brought a group of young men with him to get them to experience something different. And it was a great experience for them. They could not get over just how kind you were to them and how open you were to them. And I deeply, deeply appreciate it. Now, those times are very rare in churches. And I think we should feel honored that they selected to come here and experience it first time with us. You know, end time fears and excitement seem to ignite every generation. There are times where I'll be listening to the radio and talk radio sometimes, and people will call in when there's something serious that's going on in the world. And the words out of their mouth is, I fear that these are the end times, that the end of the world is near. The Left Behind book series in the 90s caused a renewing fervor about the nearness of the end of the world. The year 2000 was a major point when people thought that the world would come to an end. The Mayan calendar declared the end of the world in 2012. Jehovah's Witnesses proclaimed the end of the world in 1914, and then again in 1918, and then 1925, and then the 40s, and then 1975, and then the year 2000. And they also said that when the generation of 1914 passes away, that Jesus will come. And they've moved that date now to 2033. Hysteria about these things always seem to be centered on the end of the world, when the end world will come, and the predictions that come. Most of the time they get their predictions from Mark chapter 13 or the parallel passages in Matthew 24 and Luke 21. And it is important for us, and the reason that I had selected this as the lesson tonight, for us Christians to understand just what Jesus was teaching. Primarily so that the world's fears do not become ours. As Christians, it is important for us not to fear the end, but to be ready for it and to welcome it. If you will, look into Matthew chapter 13, and this is where I'll get primarily our text from. I could have done it just as easily from Matthew 24 or Luke 21, but I selected this chapter and this book. For the first few verses of this chapter is critical for us to be able to properly understand just what this chapter teaches. In the chapters leading up to this verse, Jesus has been in the temple at Jerusalem. And during this time, he was giving his final teachings to the people before he was to be arrested. And Mark 13 opens with Jesus and his disciples leaving the temple complex. And one of the disciples, he turned to Jesus and he asked Jesus to consider the wonderful buildings of the temple. Now, they were not conducting a sightseeing tour. And this certainly would not have been the first time that Jesus and his disciples had come to the temple. Jesus was a very obedient Jew. And as such, he would have presented himself to the temple at least three times each year. So what is this disciple doing by pointing out the magnificence of the temple? Contextually, in the last three chapters, Jesus condemned the religious leaders. And he declared in those chapters the fall of the temple and Jerusalem itself by the cursing of the fig tree, the cleansing and the condemnation in the temple, and also in the parable of the talents, or the tenants, I'm sorry. And after 2 days of condemning the temple and its leaders, a disciple remarks about the temple as a point of national pride. Now, the temple itself had been destroyed several times. The temple that they worship in now had been rebuilt by Herod. But it did not come close to the magnificence of when Solomon had built that temple. This is parallel to the people in Jeremiah's days, when the people in Jeremiah 7 were in disbelief that God would judge the nation because they possessed a temple. Their thinking was, God is with us because the temple stood here. But Jesus said, in spite of the grandeur of that temple, that not a stone will be left one upon another. And here Jesus plainly states what up to now has been implied in the teachings and parables given in the days prior. Jesus leaves the temple and he goes to the Mount of Olives, which is opposite the Temple Mount. 4 of Jesus' disciples ask him privately about what he had just said. In Mark 13, verse 4, they asked him, "Tell us, when will these things be? And what will be the sign when all of these things are about to be accomplished?" The context of the first question is the destruction of the temple itself. And they want to know what sign is going to come that will tell them that this is about to happen. If you'll notice, they never asked a single question about the end of the world. They did not ask anything about the second coming of Jesus. See, they still did not understand that Jesus was even leaving them. Even though Jesus many times before had told them that he was going to go. They were simply asking about the destruction of the temple and the judgment against the nation. In verses 5 through 13, Jesus begins by describing the events that will take place before the destruction of Jerusalem. In verse 8, Jesus calls these things the beginning of the birth pains. What are these birth pains? They are false messiahs. They are wars and rumors of wars. They are famines and earthquakes. These are not the signs for today, but a sign for the eventual fall of Jerusalem and the temple. In verse 9, Jesus told them that they will stand before the Sanhedrin, that they will be beaten in the synagogues, that they will stand trial before governors and kings. Jesus had told his disciples in John chapters 14 through 16 that the Holy Spirit would tell them what to say. And we see this also when Jesus told them in verse 11. We only need to look at the book of Acts and read it, and we can see all of these things unfold. But before the temple is destroyed, that the gospel must be preached to all nations. Colossians 1 and verse 6 and in verse 23, Romans 16 and verse 23, Paul writes that the gospel had been made known to all the nations. And then Jesus tells them in verse 13 of Mark 13 that they are to endure through all of these difficulties until the very end in order to be saved. And Jesus gives us further signs in verses 14 through 23. of what will happen leading up to the temple's destruction. But the big sign we find is in verse 14. When you see the abomination of desolation standing where he ought not to be, and then Mark writes in parentheses, let the reader understand. He said, let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. If this is a sign of the end of the world, what will running to the mountains do for you? Why would only the people in Judea run? Why not everyone? And this is what is leading up to the destruction of the temple. And that when the people see these, they need to leave Jerusalem and Judea extremely fast. When they see this abomination that causes them. The term abomination, desolation, is a term that is used several times in the book of Daniel. In his prophecies in chapter 9 of Daniel, verse 27, and chapter 11, verse 23, and chapter 12 and verse 11, it speaks of a power or an enemy that is attacking Jerusalem. Oftentimes, the people who prophesy the end of the world will go to Daniel, the book of Daniel, or the book of Ezekiel, and they will muddy the waters through these things. But if we sat down and studied these chapters very closely, we would see that Daniel is referencing the rise of the Roman Empire. In verse 20 of Luke 21, instead of saying the abomination of desolation, Luke says, when you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies. In other words, when you see these armies coming from a direction where they should not come, leave quickly and do not pack anything. Just go. In the book of Josephus, in his accounting of the fall of Jerusalem, Titus and his army started in the land of Palestine and the land of Samaria, and they come up on their way to Jerusalem. They were more than willing to let the Jews be at peace with them, except for some zealots that stirred up and was trying to pick a fight, if you will, with Jerusalem. These were evil men. These were not a man that had the Jews in their heart, but their own greed and selfishness. The armies came very quickly. And before the citizens of Jerusalem knew what was happening, there was no escape, for Rome had surrounded Jerusalem itself. Jesus is telling the disciples here that it would be very difficult for a woman who was pregnant and for nursing mothers because it would be so hard. And he said it would even be more difficult if this would happen in wintertime. So in verse 23, Jesus tells them to be vigilant. In verses 24 through 31, Jesus describes the event itself. In verse 24, he talks about after that tribulation. And we have a tendency, a lot of Christians, to presume that this must be talking about the end of the world, the second coming of Christ. Because the text talks about stars that will fall from heaven. It talks about the sun is going to be darkened, that the Son of Man will come in the clouds. Should we see Jesus no longer talking about the fall of the temple and the destruction of Jerusalem? And here now he is talking about the end of the world. If we look closely at other scriptures, it will help us to see that this language is commonly used to talk about the fall of a nation. I like to go to Isaiah chapter 13 and verses 9 through 13, where Isaiah writes here, "Behold, the day of the Lord comes, cruel with wrath and fierce anger, to make the land a desolation and to destroy the sinners from it. For the stars of the heavens and their constellations will not give their light. The sun will be dark at its rising, and the moon will not shed its light. I will punish the world for its evil and the wicked for their iniquity. I will put an end to the pomp of the arrogant and lay low the pompous pride of the ruthless. I will make the people more rare than fine gold and mankind than the gold of Ophir. Therefore, I will make the heavens tremble and the earth will be shaken out of its place at the wrath of the Lord of hosts in the day of his fierce anger." This also sounds like it would be the end of the world. But Isaiah here is talking about the destruction of Babylon. And while God used Babylon to punish Israel, God punished the punishers. And here in Mark 13, Jesus is speaking specifically about the destruction of Jerusalem. During that great battle that went on for months, the skies were darkened from the smoke that rose from the city itself. Fires raged everywhere. Famine occurred throughout the city. People were murdered by their own countrymen for the gold that they had with them and their riches. But what about this passage in Mark where Jesus is saying that the Son of Man would come in the clouds? If we had the time, I could show you other places in Scripture where God comes in the clouds. But in those Scriptures, it's a picture of judgment. But the easiest one and the closest one that we can find to this is in Matthew chapter 26 and verse 64. It is the part where Jesus is standing before Caiaphas, the high priest, and he told Caiaphas that he would see the Son of Man coming in the clouds of heaven. Now, if this was the end of the world, how would Caiaphas see the end and the Son of Man? In verse 30, Jesus says that this generation, and this is key, this generation will not pass until all these things take place. If you remember at the beginning of this lesson, the disciples asked when the temple would be destroyed. And Jesus said to them that the day and the hour is not known, that only God knows when this will happen. The point is, and point seems to be, that God has not yet determined when this event would take place. But what is certain is that these things will happen in their lifetime. And I'm sure that the disciples in their own mind are thinking, now what are we going to do? And so Jesus reminds them in verse 35, be vigilant and stay awake. Stay awake. Does not Paul remind us many times to be vigilant? To stay awake. There's nothing in this chapter of Mark 13 or Luke 21 or Matthew 24 that talks about the end of the world or Jesus' coming, second coming. Jesus, when he returns, will come without warning. 1 Thessalonians chapter 4 reminds us of that. And Paul in chapter 5 of 1 Thessalonians in the first six verses, he said, now concerning the times and the seasons, brothers, you have no need to have anything written to you, For you yourselves are fully aware that the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night. And while people are saying there is peace and security, then sudden destruction will come upon them as labor pains come upon a pregnant woman, and they will not escape. But you are not in darkness, brothers, for that day to surprise you like a thief, for you are all children of light, children of the day. We are not of the night or of the darkness. So then let us not sleep as others sleep, but let us keep awake and sober. You ladies that have had children know just how quickly labor pains can come upon you. Oftentimes when you least expect it, how is Jesus going to come? Like a thief. And I have yet to hear of any news story where a thief calls someone up and says, I'm going to come into your house tonight while you're asleep. He comes at a time that is not expected. Everything that is happening in this world today, with all of its wars, with all of its natural disasters, or any other events, are not signs of Jesus' coming. But we need to be just as vigilant and stay awake as Jesus had reminded his disciples to be. We cannot assume that we have tomorrow to get things right. We only have the very moment that we are in, and this very minute, and this very breath that we take. A little different from the other sermons, but one nonetheless is that we don't need to worry about when the end will come, because there is nothing that mankind can do to stop it. We can launch off every nuclear weapon in the world, and that will not be the end of mankind. But when Jesus comes again, that will truly be the end. There will be no place to run. There will be no mountain that will keep us safe. The only thing that will keep us safe is if we are in Him. And the speed in which Jesus will return and the speed at which things will happen will surprise us all. There will be no time for mourning. There will be no time for burying. It will just be gone. So stay awake, be sober, and always be vigilant. If you are not a child of God, and the end comes at the end of this service, where will you be before God? Where will you stand? Hopefully you will be on the right side through obedience to the gospel. And we want to offer you that opportunity tonight to save your soul from eternal condemnation. And if you are a child of God, have you been sleeping? Are you awake and are you vigilant in keeping with the teachings of the Bible itself? Are you doing your very best to be complete and perfect? Are you trying to make things right with God each and every day? We live in troublesome times, but man has always lived in troublesome times. Just today it seems to come at us faster because of the modes of transportation and the modes of communication that we have today. But nonetheless, it is the same. If you are not prepared, we would love to help you get prepared for that eventual time. And if you need to make things right with God, we want to give you that opportunity now as together we stand and we sing.